couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new films Vanguard, The Last Vermeer, Run, and the Lego Star Wars Holiday Special, and I might be even revisiting the original Star Wars Holiday Special. I'm also going to be talking about some news, the trailer park, and the home cinema roundup featuring a look back at the original The Christmas Chronicles. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
The first piece of news is a bit of shameless self-promotion. I have published a new short novella. It's about 40 pages long. It's available on Amazon right now. If you go to the Fat Guys at the Movies website and you click on the books section, you will find a link to all of my purchase stuff, or you can go to Amazon.com or search my name. The name of the book is called Not Even a Mouse. Like I said, it's a short novella. And it takes place in my little zombie apocalypse I've done. I've done a Halloween version. I've done a Thanksgiving version a couple years ago. Now there's a Christmas version. So it's R-rated. It's not for little kids. But if you want to read something that's different and new by an author that is obviously a total genius, you are going to want to check that one out. Like I said, it's available on Amazon in Kindle format for only 99 cents. And if you have Kindle Unlimited, you can read it for free. But back to the Hollywood version of the news segment, we have an interesting piece of streaming news coming this week, and that is Wonder Woman 1984. Warner Brothers has finally figured out what they're going to do with that. There's a lot of movies that were set for Christmas that suddenly just got pulled from the slate. For example, Soul went from a Thanksgiving release to a Christmas release, and now it's going just directly to Disney Plus. You had Death on the Nile that had been moved to December 25th, and now it's kind of moved to an indeterminate point. And Wonder Woman just sat there, and now that we're a little bit more than a month away, they finally decided, okay, here's the deal. We're going to still release it in theaters. So if you want to see Wonder Woman on the big screen, and there's theaters open around you, and they've got safety protocols in place, by all means, go see it. If you feel it's safe enough, go see it. And you can see it on the big screen. You can experience that big screen event that most of these movies are trying to be. But if you're at home, or you're quarantined, or you're in a state that does not have a great record, and the ones with skyrocketing COVID cases, which, by the way, just when it comes to COVID, don't be surprised if things don't get better in 2 weeks. Because whatever happens with the incubation period and everything, what's already going to be in 2 weeks has already been baked into the equation. So things are going to get worse in 2 weeks, and we won't see the efforts of any sort of new lockdowns or restrictions, at least for another 2.5 to 3 weeks. So that pushes you right up at Christmas, meaning that December is going to be a little bit different. It's going to be very similar to what we've had in 2020, but it's going to be different than most Decembers you've had, which means you can now watch Wonder Woman 1984 with the family if you have HBO Max, which is about $15 a month, by the way. That's a little bit pricey for a subscription service, but I think they justify it by saying they've got the Warner Brothers catalog and they've got all the HBO stuff. It's essentially getting HBO that has an exclusive agreement with Warner Brothers. The biggest problem that HBO Max has is they have not worked out a deal with Roku yet to stream it to a Roku device. If you have a smart TV that's relatively new and has the right software for it, or if you have Apple TV, you know, the box for Apple TV, or if you have an Amazon Fire Stick, I believe all of those allow you to stream HBO Max if you put in your subscription information. Additionally, if you have Hulu and have purchased HBO through Hulu, you can watch HBO Max stuff through Hulu, but you have to buy it through your Hulu account. For example, we have a Hulu account in my house. My son, who lives with us, has an HBO Max account. Well, we can't merge them because it's on his credit card versus our credit card, so we can't watch it through our Roku player. I have read an article that said that if you have a 4K Roku, like one of the newer models that will handle 4K, you can AirPlay it through, like, screen mirroring on your phone. But that's only with limited devices. Now, who knows? Maybe by Christmas they'll have a Roku workaround, which would be great. But you're going to end up having to get something different if you've got an older TV or if you just have a Roku and not an Apple TV or Amazon Fire Stick. But I think this is actually a good move for Warner Brothers. Every month that they wait to release one of these movies is that movie being in the red all that longer. And they're using it as a leader to maybe get people to sign up for HBO Max. And if they get enough people to sign up for HBO Max at $15 a pop, and if they keep that service for even just a couple months, they might make a certain amount of money. It's just it won't be reported as box office. It's the same thing happened with Mulan, where it was essentially an add-on for Disney. And Disney said they had lower numbers watching it than they wanted to, but they still felt it was a good choice, and they're putting Soul on without any sort of paywall. And I think the reason they're doing that is to boost their subscription base. They've got a huge amount of subscribers now, partly because of putting on stuff like Hamilton and the one and only Ivan and bringing out new content and The Mandalorian every week. They need to keep putting out new content for people to keep their subscriptions. I think HBO Max is vying for that, and with the Warner Brothers catalog and being able to build the entire DC universe of characters in that. I think this is used partly as a launching pad to get people to watch the Justice League Snyder Cut when that comes out next year as well. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first one I want to talk about is coming out in theaters on January 22nd, and the trailer just dropped for Chaos Walking.
That was a terrible crash. We're lucky to be alive.
Stop! Don't come any closer.
It's a girl.
Girl!
Oh my gosh, girl. I'm sorry.
No, Louis.
Blonde hair. I've just never seen a girl before.
It's so loud here.
We call it the noise. Happened to all the men on this planet. Every thought in our heads were on display.
Where are all the women?
They're dead.
I'm so conflicted in watching this trailer. I like the people involved. I like Daisy Ridley. I like Tom Holland. I like Mads Mikkelsen. I like Doug Liman, who's directed this. And there's parts of it that is a setup. It looks interesting. You know, this ability that all the women are gone and the men, their thoughts are projected. There's a lot of mystery there, but I just get no sense of real story or character development from the trailer. It seems like a great launching pad, but the trailer just doesn't deliver on what it could be. Plus, it's getting a January release. I don't even know if this is going to come out. It probably will because it's Lionsgate. So it's probably going to at least hit theaters and they're not going to be expecting $100 million. The other one I want to talk about is Tom and Jerry, which opens in theaters on March 5th.
This hotel has been host to 4 presidents, 3 popes, 2 kings, and we're about to host the wedding of the century.
Do you think you're qualified to take on this position?
I shine under pressure like a diamond.
Or Rihanna.
One other thing. We have a mouse problem.
With the what now? I'll catch it, sir. We could hire an exterminator. Or we can leverage millions of years of predatory evolution.
I was always a Tom and Jerry fan. I remember as a kid, I'd come home from school and it was always on my TV. Like it was like at 4 o'clock or 3:30 on the local independent station and I'd watch it. And I love the old Tom and Jerry. It's ridiculous and violent and stupid and totally inappropriate, but I absolutely loved them. And then when my kids were little, I'd watch Tom and Jerry with them, and I'd be cracking up, and they got a kick out of watching me laugh and crack up at the Tom and Jerry cartoon. So, and at least this looks like they're going back to the slapstick, obnoxious, violent element of what made Tom and Jerry work. Now, I'm not going to expect to see, you know, the racial insensitivity. And I'm pretty sure that Jerry's not going to be trying to blow up Tom's face with a shotgun, but at least it looks like they're not going to be pulling their punches for the political correct thing. The biggest problem is this wraparound storyline with Chloe Grace Moretz trying to exterminate Jerry because of a mouse problem. It's sort of like the Muppets. I'm like, focus on Tom and Jerry. I really don't care about these human characters. But we'll see. Anyways, I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Vanguard and The Last Vermeer.
Mm-hmm.
Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into the movie reviews. If you look ahead 3-4 weeks of the releases, there's only one or two per week. And sometimes they're big ones, like last week you had Freaky. This week you didn't have anything big. Next week you've got The Croods 2, which has been sitting there in that catbird seat for a while. And then over the course of a couple weeks leading up to the release, you start seeing more and more and more stuff getting thrown on the release schedule. And they're independent films. They're smaller movies. They're either foreign films or they're smaller films that get the air sucked out of the room by the big blockbusters. And so you get to see a lot of late arrivals. And so suddenly what's coming out in theaters is like a list of 10 movies. And I think that's kind of cool. As much as every, you know, as bad as the pandemic is and as much of an effect it's having on Hollywood, I think it's really giving a chance for these smaller movies to at least get a little bit of a spotlight. And I think that's kind of cool. Now, what's interesting, Vanguard is a film from China. It was not originally, I think, going to have this big of a release, but it saw with the pandemic, it's like, hey, let's just release this wide. Well, what can hurt us? I mean, we just get it out there. And so that's what they did. I mean, this is not a movie that was like anticipated for years or anything, at least not in the US. But it's interesting because it's the one big wide release this weekend. And in this movie, Jackie Chan stars in this action film about an elite Chinese government agency that fights crime around the world.
We are entering dangerous territory. The enemy has more men.
Protecting innocent lives is our duty.
This is clearly trying to re-energize Jackie Chan's career in China. He's done hundreds of movies, I think. I mean, for as many movies as he's done in America and for the worldwide audience, he's done 5 in China and Hong Kong. I mean, you go back to his earlier stuff, especially stuff like, you know, the Police Story movies. I think that's what this is trying to capture, sort of that original Jackie Chan actioner. But it's very high budget and it's very ambitious. Now, of course, you got to realize Jackie Chan is in his 60s now. And as fit as he is, and as good with martial arts and fighting as he still is, you really can't have him jumping from building to building like he was doing in Rumble in the Bronx or something like that. So he's sort of like the M. If you consider this Vanguard group in China, like MI6 in the James Bond movies, he's basically M. He's the one in charge. But if M had gotten in a couple scrapes along the way, but normally M was just in the office. But the bulk of the big fighting and the big action set pieces and the choreographed stuff is all done by younger actors I don't recognize because I'm just not up on Chinese cinema. I'm sure all these people have their own careers and are well known in Chinese cinema. The thing is, this movie has some fun scenes in it. It really does the spectacle well, and it does the fighting well, as you would expect. It's a little hard to follow, and that's not just because it's a Chinese movie. I mean, I watched an American dubbed version of, or an English dubbed version of it, and apparently they're releasing both. You can see the Mandarin version with subtitles, or you can see the English dubbed version. The story's kind of nonsensical. It's really hard to pin down. They're going all over the place to stop these bad guys from kidnapping someone and getting a weapon and starting a world war. It really doesn't matter. It's just there for the set pieces. They do everything from a giant river chase in Africa with lions to a huge fight in the downtown square. So, I mean, they do some really neat stuff and it's kind of fun, but it is sort of nonsensical and doesn't really make sense. It's sort of like the Chinese version of a Michael Bay movie. And overall, I have to say, I kind of respect the movie for taking the chance to jump into its opening in a vacuum. Don't go in expecting coherency or even a plot that makes sense. But if you want to see a little bit of spectacle, why not? So I'm going to say, you know, generously, I'm going to say it kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about The Last Vermeer. After World War II, a Dutch officer is put in charge of finding out the origin and sale history of a painting stolen by the Nazis.
Everything in here was stolen, and they put me in charge of finding out who took it and who sold it to the Nazis.
Collaboration with the enemy is a capital offense. They're shooting people in the streets.
This guy is an honorary Nazi, so let him swing with the rest of them.
I am an artist, not a Nazi spy.
Did he offer you some money?
How much does it cost to buy Joe Pill?
Why do you care so much about this man?
He's not the man, really. It's the fact that he's innocent.
There have been a handful of movies, especially recently, that deal with this sort of reconstruction after World War II, where authorities are basically untangling all the things that the Nazis had done. Now, obviously, you can't untangle the atrocities, but as much as they could, they were trying to find artwork that was stolen and return it to the rightful owners, or property that was stolen, or people that were missing, and trying as much as they could to sort of put everything back to the way it was before the Nazis came in and caused all these issues. They find this Vermeer, this painting by Johannes Vermeer, who's this very well-known artist from Dutch history. I think he painted in the 1600s. There was the movie The Girl with a Pearl Earring. That's a painting that he did. There's also Tim's Vermeer, which is this documentary about this guy trying to use a technique to paint like Vermeer. And so, you know, if you're like me and you get a lot of your art history from Hollywood, this is kind of treading certain familiar territory. But it's less about Vermeer as a painter, and it's more about trying to trace this piece of art. And the Dutch government is going after him because they just want to get rid of all Nazis and Nazi collaborators and punish whoever was involved. I mean, to the point of just shooting him in the street, you know, impromptu firing squad, no due process or anything like that. This does have kind of two halves to it. The first half is about researching this painting and where it came from, and the second half is this trial. And I can't say too much about it because the inherent nature of the movie and the plot relies on spoilers. If I were to tell you what the movie's about, I would have to spoil part of the movie for you, so I don't want to do that. It's directed by a guy named Dan Friedkin, and as best I understand, it's his first time directing a movie. And it suffers from a lot of problems you have with a first-time director. It runs too long. It could have been tightened up a lot in post-production. It's very, very hard to distill down what it's about and where the drama is, because where the drama is more of a secret that needs to be hidden. So it gets in its own way in a lot of ways, not just in the running time, but in a way for me to talk about it coherently. There are some good performances in there. In particular, you've got Guy Pearce playing this artist and art dealer who's the focus of this investigation, and he's quite good. But it just throws a lot of the different foibles and idiosyncrasies of people who were involved in and out of World War II that it gets really messy at certain times. So, I mean, it's interesting and it's a nice little historic lesson, even if it's a little bit, dramatized, especially near the end. It's like kind of walking over stones in a creek. You kind of stumble and slip when you really need a bridge. So I'm going to have to say, because of all the foibles, I'm going to say it kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Oh, okay. That's it for the segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about the Star Wars Holiday Special, both the original and the Lego version. At the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the movie reviews. And the one I want to focus on is the new film streaming on Disney Plus. It came out this week, I think on the 17th, because that was the anniversary, the 42nd anniversary of the airing of the original Star Wars Holiday Special. So, of course, Lego did a version of the Star Wars Holiday Special. We'll talk about that in a minute. But first, I got to give the history. I know a lot of Star Wars fans, and I know a lot of movie fans. There's no mystery about the Star Wars Holiday Special. But I know people outside of my tight circle of movie fans and Star Wars fans, this might be new to you. You gotta picture this. I feel like Sophia from The Golden Girls going, picture it. Sicily, 1940. I'm like, picture it. Columbus, Ohio, 1978. Star Wars was the biggest movie on the planet. It had been out for literally a whole year in theaters, going all the way to the summer of 1978. And a week before Thanksgiving, CBS aired a Star Wars holiday special. Shot on video. It features Chewbacca's family with no subtitles. And it had a premise of which was very popular back in the day of a variety show. So you had comedy acts and musical numbers performed, sort of like the Donnie and Marie show. It is the most bizarre fever dream of insanity you will ever experience. And you got to realize it was the very first sequel they ever did. I mean, they hadn't done Empire Strikes Back yet. Star Wars was it. It was Star Wars, and that was it. And for somebody like me who was seven, anything Star Wars was great. So this fit into 1970s television. But what you got to understand is the drugs were going crazy in the 70s, and this is the kind of stuff you got. So let's just play the little promo trailer for it, because there's actually a trailer I found from an old CBS station on the internet. In the Star Wars holiday special, Han Solo and Chewbacca are on a mission to return to the Wookiee homeworld of Kashyyyk to celebrate Life Day with Chewie's family.
CBS, what's coming on?
On Friday night, blast off to a galaxy far, far away. It's the Star Wars holiday special, starring all your Star Wars favorites. Will Chewbacca get home to his planet in time for the big Wookiee holiday celebration? Find out on the star-studded Star Wars holiday special, Friday at 8, 7, Central and Mountain.
You're on.
Now, George Lucas was very peripherally involved. I think he was involved in the original planning, and then he exited because they were working on Empire Strikes Back at the time. So Bruce Vilanch, this notorious TV writer, wrote this show, and Lucas had actually for years tried to deny its existence, but the problem is videotape was around at that time, and people had taped it. Famously off of Baltimore Station is where one of the best bootlegs come from this. And so for years, you could get it on eBay. You used to be able to go to like a sci-fi convention. You could find it in like somebody who sold bootlegs of things. But then, you know, boy, when YouTube came up, it's all over the place. Just search it. Search Star Wars Holiday Special. You'll find the unedited version of it. And I warn you, it's 2 hours long and you feel every minute of that. Some of the most entertaining things in it are the commercials because the movie is so crazy. Here's the thing. It's about Wookiees. For extended periods of time, the Wookiees have long conversations with no subtitles in Wookiee. Here's a great example. I'm going to play some clips from this movie just so you know what it's like. Chewie's wife, Nala, and her son, Lumpy, and grandfather, Itchy, are having a conversation. Here you go. Like 9 minutes of that on primetime broadcast TV. I mean, you think I was playing the sounds of goats getting slaughtered, but no, this was actual Wookiee dialogue on a primetime special back in 1978. Now, the other thing about it is it had these bizarre musical numbers, which were very popular then. And, you know, when you look at Star Wars back in the 70s, you're like, oh, it's for little kids and teenagers. And what do teenagers like more than Bea Arthur? So they said, hey, let's bring in Bea Arthur, and she can do a whole tune and sing a song to the tune of the Cantina Band. So here's a great example of that.
Just one more rhyme, friend. Yes, it's a crime, friend. But you know time, friend. Time can fly. So it's good night, friend. Good night, but not goodbye.
As you can tell, this was normal in the 70s. Then on the musical front, they also got the entire cast to return for some reason, and they all look baked out of their mind. I mean, there's a scene where Carrie Fisher, you know, God rest her soul, but she's walking around a table and she literally has to hold herself up. I think she was that drunk on set. And I don't blame her because I've watched this a couple times. And then at the end of the movie, Carrie Fisher sings to the tune of Star Wars.
We celebrate a play of
that was worth anything about this special is it introduced one of the most famous characters and most beloved and talked about characters in the universe with this animated segment. For some reason, part of it's animated. I don't know why the people are animated in live action. And it's done by the company that ended up doing the Droids and the Ewoks cartoons. And here's the character.
You saved my life. Thank you.
You are alone.
I have two droids. We've come in search of a ship that crashed near here.
Maybe I can help you. I am Boba Fett. The ship you seek is nearby.
Are the Imperial troops near this planet?
They are here, friend, and growing more powerful.
As you can tell, that was Mark Hamill doing Luke Skywalker, but that was Boba Fett. It's the first time Boba Fett ever appeared on screen. And so it has this weird piece of quality and these weird pieces of canon that goes with Star Wars. I mean, if you've never seen it, go watch it. Rift Tracks has a version of it, and it's better to watch that because your brain will die slower. Anyways, you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. I want to talk really quickly about the Lego Star Wars Holiday Special. Amid Life Day celebrations, Rey finds a device that allows her to travel in time throughout the Star Wars universe.
'Twas the night before Life Day, in a galaxy far, far away.
Looking good. Tree, food, decorations.
Coming together, heroes were, to celebrate the day. For Rey, adventure called, and she thought it would be fast.
Wow.
But there she found a key to the galaxy's past.
This is so cool! We see my master. My master's master.
Concentrate.
My master's father.
Impressive.
Look, as much as I wanted to see a recreation of a Bruce Vilanch television special with Legos doing 9 minutes of Wookiee dialogue and a Lego B. Arthur singing and a Lego Art Carney, that may not have been the best choice. So Disney decided they centered around Life Day. So it does have that Life Day element, which is this vague happy holidays version of celebration in the Star Wars universe. And they bring in a lot of the characters. You know, you got Poe Dameron and you got BB-8. You got all the characters from the new sequel trilogy. And the catch is Rey goes to this little temple that's at the end of the Star Wars Holiday Special, and she finds this artifact that allows her to travel through time. And then eventually it turns into just her popping in on different elements of the Star Wars universe, which is a lot of fun. It's a very entertaining movie, especially if you like the Lego Star Wars stuff. It's very cute. It's irreverent. It's silly. It references as much as it can through the Star Wars universe. I mean, it's more coherent. You're not going to get crazy, itchy, the grandpa Wookiee watching a Diane Carroll video and being weirdly stimulated by it. You're going to get stuff that's a little more pragmatic and normal. So the Star Wars Holiday Special, the original, I have no idea how to rate it because it's both one of the worst things you're ever going to see and one of the greatest things you're ever going to see. But the Lego Star Wars Holiday Special, I'm going to give a rocks because it's a lot of fun and it's a nod to the wonderful part of insanity of its past.
It rocks.
Excellent.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about the movie Run and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring the Christmas Chronicles. To Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's finish up with the movie reviews and talk about Run. This is one that I think a lot of people are forgetting about because it's leading up to Thanksgiving and there are a couple theatrical releases happening and everyone's trying to get a jump on the releases next week. But I don't think people are paying as much attention to this movie, and they really should. Run stars Sarah Paulson as a devoted mother who keeps her ailing daughter at home even when the girl starts to ask too many questions.
You do everything for me. You teach me. You cook for me.
Am I a burden?
Sweetheart,
I could do more.
I'm your mom. It's my job to take care of you when you need me. And you need me.
Are you okay, Mom?
Of course I'm okay. I have you.
This was originally going to go to theaters on Mother's Day. And of course, obviously, like so many movies along with it, the pandemic caused it to skip its release date. And instead of squeaking into theaters, the studio decided to sell it to streaming services, and it ended up becoming a Hulu release. So if you've got Hulu, it's available now. It is kind of sad that it didn't come out on Mother's Day weekend, or at least that they could have waited maybe till it comes out on Mother's Day weekend, because it really has a great Mother's Day feel to it. Because it's about this woman who's, you think she's this overly devoted mother, but you're also thinking this woman might be completely nutso. That's a clinical term. The movie itself, it's about her as her mother, but it's also about this girl. It's about the girl who, she's getting ready to go to college. She's sending in submissions. She has realized that she's got all these problems. She doesn't have the use of her legs, so she's in a wheelchair. She's got diabetes. She's got asthma. She's got all these different chronic illnesses. And her mother's been taking care of her for 17 years. But as the girl starts asking questions and trying to leave the nest at some point, because she makes the point, you know, at some point I can go to college. At some point I'm going to be an adult. You're not going to be here to take care of me this whole time. But then some things happen to appear that they're maybe not what she's been saying the whole time. And that's where the suspense comes in. And honestly, it's a effectively done suspense movie. Sort of similar to something like Rear Window, where somebody is trapped because of their own limitations. I'm not dismissing people who are in a wheelchair, but you are limited with how you can get away if you are bound to a wheelchair. It makes it very difficult for you to do anything, especially if you're also suffering from asthma or something like diabetes, that too much exertion can make your blood sugar plummet, you know, that kind of thing. So she is dealing with all of these elements while she's trying to do it under the nose of her mother, who seems to be maybe a little overbearing. Now, the best part about this is, of course, Sarah Paulson. And there is a section kind of in the middle, as good as the girl who plays the daughter, Kira Allen. She does a great job in the role, and she certainly carries the film and is on her shoulders. There's a whole section in the middle where it's really her trying to figure all this out and decide if she can escape or if she wants to escape. And while she's good in that, you lose Sarah Paulson for a chunk of the movie, and that's kind of a shame because she's the most entertaining part of it. And this is one of the things I love about Sarah Paulson right now. She was somebody who, in her 20s and 30s, she was a known actor. I mean, she'd been in stuff. You see her show up in stuff all the time, but she always ended up being somebody's sister or the secretary or the mom or something like that. She was never like the focus of the movie. And then she started doing American Horror Story, and people realized that she was really good at what she did, and she could play off kilter very well. And that, of course, led to stuff like Ratchet and, of course, Run. And I love the fact that she's embracing that. It's sort of like Tobin Bell, who was just this character actor working in Hollywood for a long time, and then suddenly got the Saw series, and he became a horror icon. And that's what happens. And I love to see this happen, especially for somebody who's kind of been slumming it for a couple of years. You know, if you've been in Hollywood and you've just been getting whatever roles come your way, and then suddenly you get success in your 40s, especially as a woman, getting success later than your ingenue stage, that's got to be just one of the greatest things on the planet. So I respect the heck out of Sarah Paulson for doing this and, you know, keeping her image this way so she can do essentially horror movies and thrillers. So ultimately, this one works. It's an intimate thriller. It's something, it's not a Blumhouse movie, but it feels it's got the constraints of a Blumhouse movie. And I gotta say, I enjoyed it. I'm gonna say that Run rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to jump into the home cinema roundup. This week, I want to focus on an older Christmas movie. And when I say older, I'm not talking about something from the 60s. I'm talking about it's like 2 years old. But I want to talk about The Christmas Chronicles on Netflix. Two children that are downing Christmas run into Santa Claus and have to help him repair his sleigh in order to save Christmas.
I have to work.
It's Christmas Eve.
You're going to stay home with your sister.
We should make a video. Maybe we could get a shot of...
Santa Claus?
Live and in person. One night only.
Can you go ho, ho, ho?
I don't go ho, ho, ho. That's a myth.
Christmas spirit's down 35%.
Half the planet's not gonna get toys.
So if you brats don't get presents, it's not the end of the world.
People need Christmas to remind themselves of how good they can be.
I wanted to cover this one because next week the sequel to this drops on Netflix. And it's actually, I think that sequel is getting a limited theatrical run either this week or next week at the same time. So you can see it in certain theaters. But I always wanted to watch this. Like 2 years ago, I saw it show up on Netflix and I'm like, oh, I got to watch this. And then Christmas went away. You know, it became January. I have zero interest in watching Christmas movies after New Year's Day. It's sort of, I'm done with it. I mean, I'll watch horror movies all year round. It doesn't just have to be Halloween. And I'll watch turkeys all year round. It does not have to be Thanksgiving. But I can't watch a Christmas movie in June. It just seems silly. And especially even in January and February, I can't watch a Christmas movie. And so that's why I never saw this original Christmas Chronicles. Well, now the new one's coming out. I figure I'm going to talk about it next week. So I wanted to catch up and talk about this one. And so I throw it in there. And in case you haven't seen it, it's something you can catch on Netflix right now. It's still on the service. This covers a lot of familiar territory. How many movies have we seen where a brother and sister are doubting Christmas? Something happens. Christmas spirit goes down. They run into Santa Claus and then they have to help him save Christmas. I mean, that's kind of the plot of 112 different Christmas movies. But like anything that's cliche, anything that's formula, it's always nice to see a new version of it. And I think the glue that really holds us together is Kurt Russell playing Santa Claus. You know, you never thought you'd see him do that, but he makes a good Santa Claus. I mean, because, look, he's not overly cartoony. You know, he's not like the Rankin Bass specials type of Santa Claus. And he's also grumbling throughout the movie about how, like, Coca-Cola portrays him as overly chubby. Although I don't think he says Coca-Cola, it's just a soda can. So he gives a little bit of humanity there. He gives a realist, sort of a little bit more pragmatic, normal person version of Santa Claus. I mean, not at the level that Mel Gibson did in Fat Man last week. It's a very different type of Santa Claus. This reminds me a little bit of, if you saw that movie, Legend of the Guardians, a couple years ago, probably about 8 or 10 years ago. And that was a movie with a bunch of fairy tale creatures and characters, and Santa Claus was one of them. I think Alec Baldwin did the voice, but the Santa Claus was like this Germanic gruff person, this big, big fat elf, and he had sort of these grumpy little elves that ran around with him. And that's kind of what you get here. Although Kurt Russell, he's a little grumpy, but he's just kind of like understandably grumpy. But otherwise, he plays a great Santa Claus. He looks good. He looks the part. And you can see that he's enjoying doing that. He's kind of relishing in the fun of playing Santa Claus. And I think he does a great job in it. Now, the one thing with this movie is I was not expecting it all to just take place essentially on the sleigh or around the sleigh as they're trying to get to the sleigh. I was expecting like something like the movie The Santa Claus, whole segments where they go to the North Pole. They don't do that in this movie. It's all about these kids trying to get the sleigh working again. And, you know, like I said, it follows a very formulaic story. It does. And I'm sorry, but at Christmas time and for romantic comedies and for horror films, cliches work sometimes, you know, formula works. And this is heartwarming and sweet. It has this great song and dance moment where you remember that Kurt Russell once played Elvis in a John Carpenter TV movie. But yeah, it's a lot of fun. And like I said, a lot of it's on Kurt Russell's shoulders. He does a great job kind of carrying the movie and giving that spirit of Christmas. So it's worth checking out with the family. You watch it after you watch Wonder Woman on Christmas Day. Hey, why not? I'm going to have to say the Christmas Chronicles rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
Also new this week are The New Mutants, Unhinged, Mission Impossible, the series with 0% Tom Cruise, and the Hammer Films, the Ultimate Collection, 20 lesser-known Hammer films, but still plenty to watch. And that's it for this week. Next week, I'm going to be talking about The Croods, The New Age, Mank, and Hillbilly Elegy. Until then, have a fat time at the movies or at home.